podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
City Air Chronicles is a Media Chronicles production.
Now, before we start our chat, we want you to head over to cityairchronicles.com/Patreon now and subscribe to the Chronicles Tifosi membership with a free 7-day trial. Get priority access to every episode and voice note before the rest of the world. Plus, no ads and bonus Patreon-only exclusive episodes and video episodes. Also, be sure to join the new chat community in the Patreon app and chat with fellow subscribers.
What a weekend in Serie A, gang. It was draws and draws and draws. I should have counted them before I started doing this intro, but I don't know. I know Patrick Kendrick, who is with me for this podcast, knows because he did a tweet about it. And was it 8 draws in a row, Patrick? Or was it
seven and a half, technically, because we have the Udinese-Roma game, which was abandoned level. There were 7 games which were completed, which were draws. The first 2 of the round, funnily enough, produced a result. Lazio 4, Salernitana 1, and then Lecce 1, Empoli 0. But since then, we haven't had a result.
So the run is ongoing. In fact, your tweet was asking if it was a record, and I don't know if you ever got to the bottom of whether or not that's a record for a sequence of consecutive draws.
Funnily enough, I then went to watch the Cronache di Spogliatoio content live, which I'd never seen before. I've seen the content before, but I'd never seen it streamed live before, called Fontana di Trevi with Riccardo Trevisani. And they have the encyclopedic knowledge of Giuseppe Pastore, who suggested there was an equivalent round of 7 draws from an 8-game round of fixtures. So proportionally that was higher, albeit if we were to reach 8 and that would require the Udinese-Roma game to end in a draw, then it would be a record for the single number of draws in a match day. And Jinkers as well, Giancarlo Rinaldi, got in touch to say it also matched that same 7-draw haul from, I think it was somewhere in the 1970s. Probably would have been helpful if I'd actually had the tweet to hand, but there you go. So
shout out
to Jinkers there as well.
I should have checked him before. It's just me and Patrick today, gang, I'm afraid. Mina is unable to join us, but perhaps not unfortunately the most compelling round, as we're just saying that she's had to miss this one for. I had an ex for a long time who is very into the TV show ER. And ER, I don't know if you've watched it. I'm not really a big one for medical drama stuff, not really my thing, but it goes on forever. There's millions of episodes. And I was introduced to this concept that there were moving on episodes. So there were certain episodes which nothing really happens, but that's necessary because in a long running series, you need some episodes that are just your moving on episodes. I think this was definitely one of Serie A's moving on episodes because we had midweek Europa League round before and after, which have got some pretty big stakes for Italian teams. We have a Monday night Milan derby coming up next weekend, which may well be the moment that Inter get to lift their title against their rivals. We'll get to that. But this very much felt like in the story of the season, this was one of those weekends. Everyone was just moving on in this episode and getting to the good bit. So the most exciting one. I know that's probably not a very draw you in way to talk about a podcast, guys, but I've got to be
draw
honest.
Draw being the operative word.
Exactly. Got to be honest sometimes, and not every round can be a banger. I think the place to start, Patrick, probably, because this is the one piece of news that really did get obviously everyone's attention, a scary moment in Udinese's game against Roma. Evan and Dicker, I think it was the 72nd minute of the game, falls to the ground and clutches his chest and ends up leaving the pitch on a stretcher, and the game is subsequently abandoned. We've seen some horrific incidents on the football pitch of players suffering cardiac arrests. I think the one that has forever marked Italian football was the death of Pier Mario Morosini. That was 12 years ago, I believe, to the
12
day.
12 years to the day, exactly,
Before this incident with Indica. And for certain has left a lasting impact. But of course, internationally, I suppose more recently, you'd get the example of Christian Eriksen, who fortunately his life was saved, but had a similar situation, cardiac arrest on the pitch while playing for Denmark at Euro 2020. So awareness of these things is so much higher. As it turned out, Ndicka did not suffer a cardiac arrest, or even it appears a cardiac issue. he was released from hospital yesterday, and effectively, it sounds like he suffered. And I don't know if my terminology is exactly perfect here, but a mild collapsed lung. Mild does not sound like a word that you would want to use with collapsed lung, but effectively, that's when a small amount of air gets between your lung and the chest cavity wall. And in Italian, the word they used was minimo, and that is mild is perhaps not a perfect translation, but it's the best I can do for conveying that in general, and we still don't know all of the very specifics of the situation, but in general, when a doctor talks about that situation with a collapsed lung, what they mean is it's a situation that will resolve itself, doesn't require serious medical intervention, will require monitoring and for Indica to be tracked and looked after, but certainly a lot less serious than we first feared when it happened.
Absolutely. And I think Italy have always had very rigid protocols when it comes to all of these cardiac examinations that you can undergo. I think we saw it with Ericsson, didn't we? Inter were essentially forced to sell the player on rip up his contract because I believe, and it's still the case, players can't be fitted with a pacemaker and then play professional football in Italy. So in that sense, there would have been a number of checks gone on beforehand. This is not some heart irregularity from all accounts, as you said. It's just something that can happen and unfortunately has happened. But it was very concerning at the time. But I think what emerged from this, apart from obviously the very positive outcome in terms of the player's health, which is, of course, the priority, but it was great to see the collaboration between Gabriele Cioffi of Udinese, their head coach, Daniele De Rossi of Roma, the Roma players immediately signalling to get medical attention. There was also the Friuli crowd, which was silenced by the medic who was then trying to check a pulse for Indica so he could actually hear the heartbeats and things. So I think everyone clubbed together here, and there's a real marked contrast between what we saw earlier on in Udine this season with obviously those vile scenes of racism towards Mike Maignan. This time around, very positive story coming out of Udine in the end, even though at the time it was hugely concerning because the player drops to the ground, he's holding his chest, and naturally people did fear the worst. And we have had countless examples, unfortunately, down the years of players succumbing to instances like this. You know, I think about Marc Vivien Foé many years ago. There was Miklos Feyer of Benfica. But there are also other instances. Fabrice Muamba, albeit I don't think he ever played again after that, did he? I mean, I think his heart did stop on the pitch. So I don't want to muddle up sort of medical issues because that's not my forte, clearly. But I think there's a difference, isn't there, between cardiac arrest when your heart stops and what actually happened there with Indica. And the initial reports coming out, and I didn't like this, was speculation that he had suffered a heart attack. And those reports were later scotched, as and when the player was rushed to hospital and they did tests. So I think it's also a timely reminder that we shouldn't be dashing to try and break the story unless we're absolutely sure of what it is. That was a lot of speculation about what might have happened. But mercifully, the player is okay from all accounts. We'll see what happens in coming weeks. I'd be surprised if he plays again this season. But then again, I don't know the extent of the repercussions of this. But the wisest course of action was taken. Admittedly, it's easier to do so when Udinese are outside of the relegation zone and that bit clear, and it's only round 32 and Roma in a fairly strong position, and it was 1-1 in the game. I think had it been a walkover to one team, or had they... And also they just decided, well, this is the match situation. We're going to come back another day and complete the match as well, which I think is good sense as well. Albeit someone did raise the point to me, a colleague raised the point of the environmental impact of Roma possibly flying to Friuli to contest 20 odd minutes of football. But I think in the grand scheme of things, that's a minor issue to contend with. The positive to come out of this is A, that the player seems to be on the mend, and B, that everyone then came together, clubbed together, and made sure that the best course of action was pursued.
Yeah, I think this is one of the things, isn't it, with being working in football journalism, Patrick, we end up having to be, we think we need to be experts on the football, and we try to be, but you end up sometimes having to be experts on finances, on medical stuff, and some of those things, like you just said, are not necessarily our areas of greatest strength. I know, for instance, there was a big conversation after what happened with Ericsson in the Guardian offices, clarifying from the editor's point of view, that clarifying for some of us journalists, the differences between cardiac arrest and heart attacks, because those aren't the same thing. A cardiac arrest is in simpler terms, it's an electrical issue, whereas a heart attack, that's about typically the arteries being restricted and blood or blood oxygen flow. Being unable to access the heart. It is complicated stuff. And as we say in this case, it ended up being nothing to do with his heart at all. It's to do with a lung issue. I agree completely about the way things were handled was the big encouraging thing. I mean, to bring it back to Morosini, maybe it would have made no difference, but I think one of the most sort of upsetting elements of that whole story was how completely shambolic the situation was, because there was an ambulance trying to access the pitch and there was a police car that had been parked so that the ambulance couldn't access the pitch and no one could find the person with the keys. They were physically having to shove this car out of the way. There are people breaking into it and pushing it while someone's life is on the line. And I think that seeing how everyone in Oudinet was, as you said, immediately respectful, and while how both parties basically, in the end, the decision was basically left to Roma's players. De Rossi went down to the changing room to check on Indica. He came back out, spoke to Cioffi, spoke to the referee. They said, look, we're willing to do what your players want to do. De Rossi went and spoke to the players. The players said they weren't feeling comfortable. I mean, by this point, it had been a 10-minute interruption in the game as well. And I think you could see people were unsettled. And so the decision was made. And I think it's great when a situation gets handled by adults in an adult way. It is complicated now for how this game gets finished. You've alluded to it with the travel and everything. Because the way this works in Serie A, the way the rules are written, they will just come back and complete the remaining minutes of the game. So as you said, 20 minutes plus injury time, which is a lot of organisation getting back and forth for something like that. For anyone who wanted to know exactly how that's going to work, any player who was eligible to play in the match on that day will be eligible for selection. They do not need to field the same 11 players who are on the pitch. Which makes sense because, of course, if they play in a couple of weeks' time, there may be injuries. You might not have the same players available. The only restrictions are you can't use anyone who was already subbed off or who would have been suspended for the game. Now, I think there were, or who'd already been sent off in the game. No one's been sent off in the game. So those are the restrictions on the teams that will be selected. And we will wait to see when the date is. And the rules also state, preferably, that in this situation, the game should be finished the next day. But, of course, Roma had a Europa League game to prepare for, and the rules do provide that. They say if there's a midweek round, then different allowances are made. So that is why that game was not finished. Was definitely poised at 1-1. Udinese had started much the brighter. Roma definitely looked like a team who were in the middle of a more important tie and had made 7 changes, I think it was, from the game against Milan. Lukaku, though, had put them back level and probably at the point when this game stopped, looked the more likely to score, but very much, as I said, in the balance, which is the theme of this week and all of this week's games. I don't know if there's anything else you want to say about Udinese versus Roma.
No, I think we've just seen what a good side Udinese can be against the big teams. I remember when I was doing their game against Inter in the previous round, a lot of their victories have come against bigger opposition. When you consider they beat Lazio, they beat Juventus away, they beat Milan away as well. So it seems to be they raise their game for when they play the bigger clubs, and Roma, certainly in that bracket. It's just been too many draws for them. So it seems appropriate that we sort of segue into draw round by talking about Udinese, who are the masters of the draw themselves.
Yeah, and I'm trying to decide which draw we go to next. Perhaps because we all love to think about Claudio Ranieri and his endless comebacks, and because it's the Champions League, perhaps the obvious place is to go to Inter against Cagliari on Sunday night. By this point, we already knew that Sassuolo had drawn against Milan. That's probably the most entertaining draw of the weekend, so we will get to that as well. But
not the Derby della Mole, Nikki? Was that not the most entertaining draw?
Not so much. That was 90 minutes of football that happened, wasn't it? Inter-Cagliari was an odd game. Inter definitely not at their best. They did know, with Milan having drawn, they knew that a win would mean even a draw in next week's derby against Milan would have sealed them the title. This draw means they can still win the title by beating Milan next weekend, but definitely the win would have positioned them even more strongly to have that moment. It was, to me, felt like a game being conducted between one team who perhaps a feeling now that that title is in their hands and we're a little bit too relaxed. And a Cagliari team who we see just keeps fighting and keeps finding these goals when they need to.
Yeah, uncanny parallels as well. I did the Inter-Cagliari game and I'd done the Cagliari-Atalanta game the previous weekend. And it was very similar in that Atalanta scored after about a dozen minutes. Inter did likewise. And then you think, okay, we've done the hard bit, we've broken them down. But Inter never really pressed ahead and looked like scoring that second goal. The equaliser was a slightly quirky one because it's just a long ball forward. It just cannons off Tito Lovullo. I mean, he cushions it down on his thigh. And then Shomurodov, who I've always been a big fan of, I know it didn't work out for him at Roma, but I think technically is an excellent player. He lashed it home. What's weird is we're seeing just how many goals Inter are conceding now where they weren't conceding before. I think we had this; they had that perfect combination earlier on in the season of not only having the best attack, but it wasn't only they would keep clean sheets. It was the fact that they would provide such solid protection for Sommer that he wasn't even having saves to make. And now, whilst you can't accuse him of making mistakes for either of these two goals, unlike the mistake he made with Dumfries in Udine, I think we are now seeing that if teams get at Inter and they do drop that little bit deeper, then they can be hurt. And what was impressive from Cagliari was that they not only equalised once, they did it twice, because Frattesi came on, looked like he'd made the difference again off the bench, winning the penalty. Yerry Mina with the handball. Calhanoglu scores. It's now 16 penalties from 16 for Inter. And you think, OK, job done. Inter just need a draw in the derby. On we go. And yet Claudio Ranieri, who spoke after the game, they said, you know, how can you leave Nicolas Viola out? And he said, well, because I know how much damage he can do off the bench. He's such a technical player. He could do a job starting, but why should I use him from the start against fresh players when I know I can bring him on fresh against tired players? And he's such an intelligent player that he not only understands my team selection, but he also understands what to do, when to do it, where to be. And Viola scored once, having scored the winner against Atalanta with his head. Here he scored a wonderful finish after it cannoned off the forearm, shall we say, of Lapadula. I know that caused some contention as well as to whether that should have been handball. And then Viola really should have scored a header to win the game for Cagliari. And I think Claudio Ranieri's shown again that he knows what his squad is capable of. He's well aware of their limitations, but they just have this happy knack of going and going and going until the final whistle. And they've got Juventus next. But I know this isn't a preview for the next round, but If I were a betting man, which I'm not, I would put a lot of money on Cagliari beating Juventus in Sardinia coming up on Friday evening.
Yeah, when Ranieri's having these late game moments, it just brings me back to, I mean, for me, it was conversations that I got to have when he was at Leicester, actually, because I was then sort of being asked to speak to players who'd worked under him when he was in Italy. And there was the whole conversation back then. Everyone was very excited about the dilly-ding, dilly-dong. and I was... I remember speaking to Ivo Pulga, who played under him at Cagliari the last time around. And Pulga was absolutely adamant, that started at Cagliari. You need to write that started at Cagliari. But it's, you know, that was always the thing, wasn't it? The dilly ding dilly dong was the wake up, guys. We need you to apply yourselves now. You're not concentrated enough. And he seems to keep getting that reaction late in games. But Viola it's a fascinating story because he's really not someone who's had a great,
he's a journeyman, isn't he?
Exactly. Like top level career. He's played significant parts of his career in Serie B. He was at Benevento when they came up, went back down, came up again. So he's not someone who you think of as being this superstar, but he has come to the rescue time and again, as you say. I think he's now their top scorer on 5 goals, by the way. So, it really has been a collaborative, collective effort from Cagliari. And if you're asking me to bet right now, I think I would bet on them staying up because I just think they have that ability to go to the end of games, which can make the difference. As for Inter, Lautaro was suspended for this game, perhaps very conveniently for him to make sure he wasn't suspended for the
derby next. And Pavard as well.
Pavard as well, as you say. So we had Alexis Sanchez starting up front, who actually had a good game. But it definitely... Again, it's hard for me to say something more profound than had the feeling of a moving on episode from Inter's point of view, that they're looking ahead to that derby. That derby's the one they've got circled. Obviously, they would have preferred to win this game and get to that game in position to feel really confident about winning the league against Milan. But there was definitely, I think, a gap in motivations between the two teams in this one.
Yeah, and I quite like the narrative aspect of the fact that Inter have to go and beat Milan. Milan are the home team, so that the majority of the stadium will be populated by Rossoneri fans. And obviously, we've seen that Inter have won the last five derbies, then won five in a row in the calendar year of 2023, lest we forget, across all competitions. So I think there's something to that. It might have, you know, had they been able to have the famous, as the Italians would say, two results out of three, you know, afford to draw the game, then I don't think it would have had the same edge. It might have been a really sort of cagey game. But I think now they're going to have to go for it. Milan will want to beat them as well. So I quite like the way that that's set up, to be honest.
Become a member at patreon.com/Serie A Chronicles for regular bonus episodes and content.
Sports Social Podcast Network.